Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I am your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch. And I've got my marvelous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you today, Matt?
I've slammed the nega bands together, so I'm free from the negative zone for a limited time.
Fantastic. Well, I thank you for your limited time engagement. I'm going to start by apologizing and thanking all of our patrons and supporters out there. Last week was not a great week for Rossi or myself, so we apologize for the lack of show, either show, so we're going to see if we can make that up to you a little bit this week, but I do want to thank everybody for their understanding and their support. It did mean a lot, especially to me, after last week, so thank you very, very much.
Nothing to me. You're all doomed. Doomed. No, I'm kidding.
So we have a lot to talk about since we had that week off. We have two afterlives that we can talk about, as well as an interesting theory from some information that found up in an item in the beta, which is some intriguing information potentially about the Nathrezim. I'm going to let Matt go ahead and do some explaining on that one.
We should point out that we're not 100% sure that the book in question, it's a book that's found in Shadowlands. We're not 100% sure that the book is written by a Nathrezim. It all signs point to it. I'm personally convinced, but I just want to say that nowhere in this book does it say I, a Nathrezim, am betraying everything and doing all evil stuff. I just want to make that clear. The book does not actually say this book is written by a Nathrezim anywhere in it, but what it is a report, and it's a report back to a figure in the Shadowlands that is never named. We don't know exactly who it's written to, but it's a report of efforts on the part of somebody who is almost certainly an Nathrezim. Come on, guys, it's a Dreadlord. talking about how they are basically infiltrating every, like, the
aspect
Legion,
of reality,
the light, the holy light, the void, they're infiltrating all of it. They've got people everywhere, and they're trying to subtly manipulate them and move them in the direction that the unnamed, you know, subject of the letter, the person who's written to, it's like, you know, as per your orders type stuff, you know, we're doing this. And he talks about how consuming fel is distasteful but necessary to manipulate the Legion, and it talks about how the light are such, you know, the light will accept the second they believe you've converted to them, they will immediately accept you and allow you to, you know, move freely within them, which is pretty disturbing if you remember Legion, because there was Lothraxian, the Dreadlord who'd supposedly converted to the light and was now, you know, Turalyon's best friend, and everybody liked him and everybody trusted him. And this book definitely makes it sound like he's a plant working for the Nathrezim. And Joe had talked about this before. I want to make sure people get that. Way back when we first saw Shadowlands, Joe was the one who said, those guys looking at various creatures from, I believe it was Revendreth.
Yep.
Might have been from Maldraxxus too. He said, they look a lot like Dreadlords.
Revendreth. It was Revendreth where I pointed it out, where I was like, there's a lot of physiology that is shared. There's a lot of a biology that's shared with Dreadlords.
Yeah. And the letter is, because the letter or book or whatever you want to call it, is written to a sire, some people think it's Sire Denathrius that it's written to.
Which, and now that we've seen him, like, he screams Dreadlord model, right?
Yeah, he's very similar. And because Denathrius is working for the jailer, the idea is that the jailer may somehow be sending people off to infiltrate all these various things. And we know from back in when Chronicle came out, we know that the Dreadlords, when they were first met by Sargeras, when he first saw them, they were on a void planet studying the way the void was infecting the planet.
Yeah, not so, part and parcel with the void, studying the void. And that's something that I've had a lot of discussions in the last couple of days about that particular point. Is at the time of discovery, they weren't agents of the void yet.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, we know that they have an affinity for it, but we knew that they weren't actually part of it. And we know that it's meeting the Dreadlords that supposedly tips Sargeras over into Puron, you know, no, we just got to destroy everything. So it's possible Legion only even exists because of these guys. If the Dreadlords are the people that this book is referring to, and they've infiltrated the light, they've infiltrated the void, they've infiltrated Fel, they've got people in nature, the life, they specifically mention life, that they've got agents inside life. And they even say the Titans are easily manipulated.
Yep.
They have agents within the Titans as well. That's a lot. And you think about what that would mean. One of the things it would mean is that the Dreadlords have a connection to the Shadowlands than have from the beginning.
We've talked about that in the past, I think, a few times.
Yeah. It would also mean that we now would understand how there's a possible path from the jailer to the Legion in terms of Frostmourne and the Helm of Domination.
Yeah, because we know that they were created in the Shadowlands. We never knew exactly how Sargeras and his flunkies got a hold of it.
Kil'jaeden specifically. It was Kil'jaeden who got them and Kil'jaeden who used them. One of the things we should point out is that before recently, we didn't know where the Helm of Domination or Frostmourne came from. That's new information.
It was new information, yes.
Yeah, but we did know that the Dreadlords were involved in getting those weapons out and getting Frostmourne out into the world. It was Mal'Ganis who worked to corrupt Arthas and get him up to Northrend to pick up the sword. It should be noted that he was very surprised when Arthas tried to kill him using it. That wasn't part of the plan. Arthas is clashing with the Dreadlords. Remember, it was the Dreadlords who were left in charge of Lordaeron when the Legion finally came in and took over. So it was the Dreadlords who were ruling the corpse choked, scourge infested, remains of Lordaeron after the Legion was beaten. As if they had no difficulty with this concept. They weren't bothered at all by the fact that the Legion had failed. And they've always been shown, like in Warcraft 3, the Dreadlords were shown meeting in some strange otherworldly place that we've never figured out what it is. Some people argued that it was the place that Illidan raided when he got the key that he used to open the portal to Argus in the first place. In the book Illidan, the one that came out during Legion, which was a very good book, by the way, and you should read it. But we've never really known. And this book, if it pans out, if it turns out it is the Dreadlords and it turns out that they have been infiltrating everything from the start, the ducks are all in a row for that.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of stuff already in game, and the book actually mentions there's a connection to the Ilganoth whispers, and unfortunately I don't remember the whisper completely, but there's a really interesting thing about he serves six masters, but really only one.
The cunning ones kneel before six masters, but serve only one.
Yeah, and so that would fit very well into this. The cunning ones being the dreadlords, who you can't,
and
that fits them perfectly.
And then the second part of that, which is six seats at the high table, six mouths that hunger, one will consume all others.
Yeah, and that would definitely be along the lines of what the jailer is trying to do here. But one of the interesting things too is that the book even points out that they're kind of playing with fire and with the void. Because the void could know what they're doing because they know everything. Like they can see all these different alternate paths. It's quite possible that while the dreadlords are trying to infiltrate the void, that the void is fully aware of it. And we've seen the void in Shadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them in Bastion. They're attacking it. So it's quite possible the void is aware of what's going on here. And it's all, we'll remember, this reminds me of the fact that there's a old god who called himself the old god of death. And that always kind of comes back to me. Why was Yog-Saron the old god of death? Why did Arthas use so much Saronite?
Mm-hmm.
What's the connection there? There's more to this. And it's fascinating. I want to let Joe talk about it some because I've been talking a lot here. If you have anything you want to throw in before we move on.
Yeah, there's a lot of... This whole idea of the Nathrezim being so ingrained in everything from the very beginning for a very particular purpose is intriguing, to say the very least. And thinking of all of the moments in Warcraft history that they've been around, and think about it. How long was, why can't I think of his name now? Varimothras, chilling out in Undercity. Right? Is he the reason that the plague got the new plague that was created for the Wrathgate was such a success? Because you play through a little bit of Maldraxxus and you can see about that plague. You can see where some of that virility or virus-like nature sort of is born, where sort of the proto version or real version of what was the Scourge, what was this undead, what was being raised by the sense of plague. Did he let that sort of slide in? Was that part of that machination to sort of consume everything? Was that part of that purpose? Is the Nathrezim responsible for what's happening with Alun's disconnect from our plane of existence? Is there something that they could have done that maybe worked against it? Are they still around? Because we know that they don't really die, right? We've seen...
Oh, yeah, Mal'Ganis showed right back up.
I mean,
we thought Mal'Ganis was dead because Arthas supposedly killed him, and then there he was.
He was right there.
We saw Varimothras. What's interesting is the Legion was torturing Varimothras in Antorus. So it's possible that the Legion was starting to figure out, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that I started thinking about too. Is that why Sargeras was enveloping Azeroth? Did Sargeras actually start to have an idea of what was actually going on? And we won't know because he's over in the Pantheon seat doing whatever he's doing, being stabbed with toothpicks by Illidan. But it's one of those really interesting concepts of, did Sargeras know more because of that, because of him sitting there and torturing Varimothras? Was it something that was unexpected? Because we talk about, Mal'Ganis getting killed by Arthas and not expecting it and then popping back up. How did he manage to do that? Did he just travel to the Shadowlands and come right back out? Was Varimothras an exception to that rule because he was killed and put through the Legion's sort of engine of rebirth and torture and reprogramming? What was it that he spilled? Because when we see him, he's not right. Even by Dreadlord standards, he's not right at all. And it was always interesting to me to think about that. What secrets did he divulge, if he divulged any, and was it intentional? Or was it something where this is all part of the game, and this was part of that further infiltration where it's pushing Sargeras to that point where everything that happened with the stabbing of Azeroth was all part of breaking down that wall between Azeroth and the Shadowlands.
It should be pointed out that even figures like Tychondrius that Illidan killed
still around
came back.
Yep.
So Deatharok, Balnazar, I mean, we've seen all of them in Legion. Balnazar came back. And, you know, it's possible that they came back because the Legion machinery, you know, rebirthed them like it did all the other demons. But it's also possible that it's quite possible the Legion got the idea of it from the Nathrezim, who themselves can do it because they're from the Shadowlands. I mean, we were always told that demons, when they're killed and sent to the Twisting Nether, they come back. And there's that whole thing Illidan used to say about his immortal demon soul. But it's possible that the Nathrezim are the ones who gave Sargeras the idea to create Antorus and did so in order to take something that would be offensive to them. The demon ability to die and return would be really offensive to Shadowlands creatures, because that's not how it's supposed to go.
Nope.
You're supposed to die and go to the Shadowlands and your anima gets returned. And you're not supposed to be this weird, chaotic, fell, the soul destruction thing and just keep coming back. Think of it this way. Fell is like the worst thing to a Shadowlands being, because fell is created through the destruction of the soul. Remember, they use soul engines. They burn souls for power. If you're burning the soul for fell power, it doesn't go to the Shadowlands. They would be horrified by this. It would be an absolute problem. And hence, consuming fell is distasteful, because it's like the soul, the anima that they use is like destroyed to create fell. It'd be like sucking down ashes all the time. And that's fascinating to me. That concept that, you know, they've infiltrated the Legion, they infiltrated the demons, because demons existed before the Legion.
They did.
But the Legion is in very big part a creation of the Nathrezim. They're the ones who shaped it. Before Sargeras went and got the Eridar, and that might have been a huge problem for them that they had to work around. And you see, but the Nathrezim are like they're the ground level manipulators. I mean, you got Kil'jaeden, who calls himself the Deceiver, but you know, he's got nothing on the Nathrezim.
No, and going back to how ingrained they are, just like the list of them is long, I think larger than a lot of people realize. Like, there's a lot of them out there. So like Tychondrius, Anatheron, and Mephistroth are like some of the ones that everybody seems to remember. You have Anatheron, who was killed at the, or quote unquote killed at the Battle of Mount Hyjal. So everybody remembers him. Balnazar, was the one that was secretly leading the Scarlet Crusade. You have Lord Banehollow, who was part of the Shadow Council at Jadenar and Fellwood, which is something that a lot of people, I don't think everybody talks about that anymore, but that was a big thing back then. You have Beltharis, who, quote-unquote, was killed by the Scarlet Crusade, which was led by Balnazar. So when did that, what actually happened there? You have them appearing in Netherstorm, with what I think is Kul'Thas. Yeah. You have the one that Kael'thas supposedly killed after laying siege to Dalaran. You have the one that was a Deatharok, who held Lordaeron before Sylvanas Windrunner took that back over. There are just so many, and they're all over the place. We've encountered them at every single layer of every single action of every single expansion. Like, everything we've done, there's been a Dreadlord. There's been a Nathrezim watching, waiting, involved in some capacity. And it's just fascinating to think that they've been shaping this from the very, very beginning, subtly or leaving, like, just as much as having a target on them. Because how many times have we dropped what we were doing to go hell for broke after one of them, or to, you know, deal with the Scarlet Crusade, or to deal with, you know, the runes of Farallorn and Netherstorm, or, you know, to deal with the one that's running around Silverpine Forest in, that is what, Gavelmok? They're just all over the place, and it's just fascinating to think that we haven't really been giving them, I think, the consideration or thought that they should have been throughout all of these years, and it's probably going to bite us in the butt.
I mean, one thing to keep in mind too is like Verimathras, despite having been held in Antorus and tortured, knew everything Sylvanas was doing.
Yeah.
Oh, everything. Yeah. He knew everything she was doing. He knew exactly what was going to happen in Battle for Azeroth. He drops hints when you fight him. He straight up says, oh yeah, you don't know anything. You don't see what's coming, but I do. How? Just because he's that evil? I mean, they've been torturing him for how long? But he still knows everything Sylvanas is doing. And it's not just because he was there in the Undercity watching her. It's because he's got a full... It's like, it would make sense. He's got a full pipeline. If the all the Nathrezim are part of this, if they're part of this whole thing, then he, of course he knows what she's doing.
And I also find it fascinating too, because, and there's some mild spoilers that I can get into here with the beta, is now considering this and considering how the entirety of Revendreth ends, that storyline, like, it makes it feel like this has been a long-term gambit from way back when that Sardin Athreus has been in, because a lot of the aspects of Sardin Athreus and a lot of the Venthyr make it feel like the Dreadlords might have been the proto Venthyr. Like, if they were all raised, like if they were the first raised by Sardin Athreus and they're all linked, some interesting implications there.
It might have even been like the species of which Sardin Athreus is the eldest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all been born out of Revendreth, and then just the rest of them went off to do this. But one of the things I'm going to talk about, which is not this book, but it's something I wrote a post for the site about today, talking about Helya, because there's a voice line at the end of the other side dungeon where Muzala takes credit for bringing Helya into the jailer's
Pantheon of Death. Yeah.
And he also basically takes credit for having gotten Sylvanas on the throne in the first place. But it's more than that. He basically says the way he phrases it, he basically says all making a deal for, you know, Odin's eye. And some people have taken that to mean that he's promised Helya to give her Odin's eye. But I've been thinking about it a lot. What if instead the whole deal with Odin was to get Helya?
Yeah.
That they never were interested in Odin. They didn't care about Odin. They wanted Helya. So they made the deal with Odin, knowing Odin would probably force Helya to become a Valkyr. And the Valkyr are basically reverse engineered Kyrian.
Yep.
And if you look at Helya, she was a Titan Forge. She wasn't one of the Keepers. She was just a Vrykul. But she was Titan Forged, and she was good enough at what she did that Master Ra'den had her help him create the elemental planes. So when they were creating planes, creating new places of existence, and they were walling them off, trapping things inside them, Ra'den had Helya help him with that. And later on, she got so good that when Odin decided, I don't want my Halls of Valor anywhere near Ulduar anymore, and she's the one that floated them up and put them in another plane of existence. That's why when she turned on Odin, it was easy for her to trap him in the Halls of Valor, because she's the one that made the plane they existed in the first place. She's the one that moved the Halls of Valor out of Ulduar, which is why they're not there now, and put them in another plane of existence at Odin's request. She was loyal enough to him to even summon somebody who now probably turned out to be Muzala and make the deal. And, you know, the question becomes, how did Muzala get the quote unquote specs for Kyrian? But think about this. Odin's Titan, a Titan Forged. Odin's specifically a Titan Keeper with the power of a Titan. You know, he is at one point he was even inhabited by one. He draws directly on their power. He is one of their creations. He is invested with their power. He was the prime designate. And somehow he can make his own Kyrian. He didn't know how. He had to be told how, but the power to do it wasn't given to him by Muzala, just the knowledge of how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
How do Titans have that power? How do their creations have that power? And how does that tie into the first ones that we know existed and we know probably created the Shadowlands? Because there's a portal created by a first one in the middle of the Maw, and a Titan-forged being, or possibly not a Titan-forged being, but one who's been touched by a Titan, can activate that gateway. Jaina can't activate it. Thrall can't activate it. But you, somebody who's worn a Titan's power around your neck, carried around, you know what I'm saying here?
Yeah, one who's gone through the cleansing process of a Titan facility, one who's been in close proximity to how many Titan engines at this point, who has walked through the halls of origination, who has sat in the seat of the Pantheon. Like, we were there at one point, and that's not something that any of the other NPCs can say. Really,
and that's like, yeah, Magni and Velen, sure. Yeah, could, but otherwise, you know, I'm just thinking about this in terms of, like, if they were going for Helya the whole time, it would make sense. If you want to breach the barriers around a prison plane created by the first ones, if you're the jailer and you want to get out but you can't get out,
you find somebody who's used to architecting prisons.
Yeah, get somebody who's good at creating pocket planes, and make her. If you get her to become a Valkyr, now she also understands Kyrian, because she's been turned into one essentially. And what's happening in this expansion? She's corrupting Kyrian.
Yeah,
the Mossworn serve her. She's the one doing this, and once you've done that, now you think about it in terms of the Helm of Domination and Frostmourne. If the Nathrezim are the way that the Legion got them, the Legion wouldn't have necessarily asked a ton of questions. The Nathrezim is like, yeah, we got these artifacts, use these. Were they put there to let somebody else start making Valkyr? Because they were given to Arthas.
And Arthas, what did the Lich King
them
do? Yeah.
He used them to make Valkyr. We always thought he'd somehow studied Helya to do that.
Or looked into the Shadowlands, right?
Yeah. But that, in fact, maybe that's exactly what he did, just like Odin.
Mm-hmm.
He could look into the Shadowlands. He could figure out how to do it. And the power of those artifacts is directly drawn from the Maw. And it's channeled through what? What was Arthas Menethil? He was a human. He was created by Titans. He was, descended from their creations. There's a lot to this that we don't really understand yet, but I think that whole thing we saw, and this is going to tie into Bastion, so I think at this point we should just start talking about Bastion.
Yeah, go ahead.
But one of the things we see in the Bastion short is that when Arthas struck Uther with Frostmourne, and we don't know that this is what it does to everybody, but we know that it trapped souls inside of itself. It's one of the things it did. It trapped his soul inside of it the moment he touched it. It took Terranus' soul within it. It had, thousands of souls screaming inside of it. When he killed Uther with it, Uther got ripped in half. And half of him, or a part of him, went to the Shadowlands and became a Kyrian. But his wound was so great that he was still unable to forget his mortal life, and seeing what had happened to him made Devos start to lose her faith in the Kyrian, because she saw that the blade was drawing power from the Maw. Think about, what if that's what they wanted? They wanted Uther's soul to go there. They knew Uther would be dedicated. They knew he'd be, do you know what I'm saying?
He's a servant of the light in such a way that if they could predict where souls would be weighed and sent to, it's very clear that a person or a soul with that strong of a sense of duty, that strong of a sense of right and righteousness, would go to Bastion. Because
if they're infiltrating everything,
mm-hmm.
if they have somebody in the light, they would know that. The light's easy to predict. They believe in one true path. And
when was Lothraxian turned? How many thousands of years ago?
Years. Yeah. Remember, it's even though the time is different in the Twisting Nether, and we know that they were around for 1,000 years. The 1,000 years of war was the story where he's introduced. He was there before they even showed up.
Yeah, and he was there before Uther ever died. He was there before any of that stuff really, really happened, right?
Yeah, so if he's been feeding them information on the light, they'd know exactly how to play this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you look at the Lich King was not tremendously invested in helping the Legion actually win. Like as soon as they, and he didn't, the Legion, when the Legion came and they immediately dismissed Arthas and were like, yeah, go pound sand. The Lich King doesn't get upset about it. In fact, the Lich King is perfectly happy about it because now he can send Arthas to give Illidan the Skull of Gul'dan and basically take Tychondrius out. And if it's all a plan, Tychondrius would have been just fine with it. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Like it's a lot here. And we should talk about the Bastion Short in general. Do you want to like recap the Bastion Short or do you want me to do it?
Go ahead, please.
Okay. The Bastion Short is basically, it starts with, you know, Uther essentially being murdered. He arrives in Bastion and he's told that his, you know, his new life will begin and he will, you know, he'll leave behind his mortal existence. There's no evil in the Shadowlands. And Uther the whole time is like, no, he must be punished. He betrayed.
He can't let go, basically.
You know, he murdered me. He must be punished. There must be justice. And the Kyrian are like, you know, go ahead and forget about all that. And he's like, no. And then you see Devos, who's the main Kyrian. I forget what her role is, but it's pretty important. She's a big deal, and she's working.
Not Archon, right?
No, she's not the Archon, but she's like one of the aspect type peoples. They're various Kyrian who like have a specific purview, and I can't remember what hers is. I apologize. I've done Bastion like 80 times, but it's always the various names don't stick. But Devos is important, and she's seeing him, and she's like, this doesn't. I mean, he's just so, like, I don't
Paragon.
Know
how.
Paragon, thank you. And she's like, I don't understand how he's going to let go. And the voice of Tuvok playing another Kyrian, and I don't remember who he's playing. Like, I don't remember the character's name. I don't think it's ever even mentioned in the short. But he's there, and he's like, you know, be careful. And meanwhile, I'm going, it's Tuvok. What are you trying to kid, man? That's Tuvok. But he's basically telling her, you know, be careful what you say. Because she says at one point, it feels like they've made a mistake sending him here. And he's like, you know, be careful. You can't, the Archon, none of this can be a mistake. There are no mistakes. That can't happen. And so she goes to Uther and she's like, look, you have to let go. And he's like, I can't. How can I let go when I've been wounded like this? And he shows her the wound that Frostmourne inflicted. And she's like, what? That's, you're not supposed to be wounded. Your soul is your soul. And she like, she goes, show me, and touches it. And she sees Arthas kill him. And she sees at the moment Arthas killed him, you can see it in the video. There's like this moment where like, there's two forms above him. One is like this blue form that's like it's just squiggles. And then there's a golden one behind him. And it's like, it's at this moment where it feels like he's been pulled into two pieces. And Frostmourne pulled part of him into it, but the rest went to Bastion. And because of that, he's got this unhealing wound on his soul. And Devos sees this and freaks out because A, that's not supposed to happen. And B, the sword, the runes on the sword are from the Maw. And that means, you know, to her, if that's Frostmourne is clearly drawing upon the Maw's power, the Maw is loose. There's entities from the Maw are loose. And she goes to the Archon and the others, and she's like, yeah, we've seen this. Because I've studied him, I've seen this. We have to act. And they're like, that's not possible. The Maw is the Maw. Nothing can leave it. And she's like, the weapon is from the Maw. I've seen it. And finally, the Archon just tells her to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stop talking. We don't want to hear this. It's not true. Shut up and go do your job. And so Devos is like, all right, and goes and makes Uther one of the ascended. She ascends him, even though he's obviously not ready. He's very clearly not over his mortal life in any way. And because of that, he's the one who, you know, she takes him with her when Arthas dies atop Ice Crown Citadel. They grab his soul and they take it to the Maw. And she's like, and Devos is already acting pretty weird. Like Devos has gone from loyal member of the Kyrian to take your revenge. She's kind of like, that needs to be explained. Like, but if Helya has reached out and used her moment of doubt to corrupt her, that would make perfect sense. But we need to see some stuff about that. She's telling him, you know, throw him into the Maw. And he says, you know, it's not revenge, it's justice. But at the same time, he's like, he was my student. And there's obvious conflict. Like he, part of him wants to not do this. Part of him, you know, still remembers Arthas as his student, still remembers who, you know, the good times, for lack of a better word, remembers when they were, you know, as close to friends as a teacher and a student are going to get. And, but he still does it. He still throws them into the mall. And that's how the whole thing ends. We know. And again, there's some spoilers here if you haven't done anything in the beta, but we know Uther is heavily involved in the whole Kyrian storyline and the Mossworn. That's a big thing. Uther is part of that. So yeah, that's pretty, if you connect that to the thing with the Nathrezim, if you connect that to the stuff about Helya being the thing that they were after all along, there's a lot going on here. The idea that Helya was the prize from the beginning, that they were after Helya, that they brought Helya in to serve the jailer, that Muzala was behind it, that was Muzala who made the deal for Odin's Eye.
And we still have no idea what happened with Odin's Eye yet either, too. Like what?
No, we do not. I mean, one of the things that I think a lot of people have mentioned, I think you've mentioned it, I think I've mentioned it, is the possibility that the Eye is being used in the exact inverse way. Like the whole time that Odin has been looking into the Shadowlands, the jailer or Muzala or somebody has been looking through Odin into the world.
See, I've been kind of wondering about that specifically with the jailer, because there's that one piece of its character model that we don't quite understand, and it's this perfect sphere of darkness in the middle of its chest. And I've been wondering, since all this stuff is coming out, if maybe that is what happened with the Eye. Muzala made the deal, brokered the information, got, you know, did what he needed to do to get his piece set in motion, and that was the specific ask. Because like you said, Titans can essentially make Valkyr. They have that ability. They didn't have the knowledge. So if they can make them, if they have that ability, why? How? Is that what was important? Is that something that the jailer needed to start all of this in motion? Because Muzala being a Loa of Death and wanting to be, you know, raised back to prominence, okay, I can understand why he would want to side with the jailer. I want to consume all of the souls, all the tasty, tasty souls. I'm on board with this. And if
you looked at Muzala?
He's got the giant medallion.
Not just his model.
Yeah, he's huge.
It's not just huge, though. He looks like a troll Mogu.
Yeah, he is.
And we know that the trolls found constructs that they, you know, basically treated like Loa. We know that they did. Those constructs don't look particularly like trolls, but they were still Titan creations, and they were still involved in a lot of the stuff that troll culture comes from. A lot of the Zandalari's major city is basically built atop a giant Titan construct. It's built upon the lock for I want to say Aldir. Is it Aldir? What's the name of that?
One of the Aldir locks. Yeah.
It's built on the lock. And then if you go over to other places of importance to the Titans, the other locks were also places that had troll cities built on them. And that's interesting to me because it suggests that the reason Muzala was brought in might be because he's got a Titan connection.
Yep. Or at the very least, a Titan connection and an old god connection. Because don't forget, the old god that we fight, you know, the whole Gahoon thing is an artificially created old god by the Titans. Like, it exists because they made it. Their experimentation, all of that corruption, everything that happened there. And what if that was also part of the reason he was brought in? Because we talk back to the Nathrezim talking about how they infiltrated all of these places, all of these things. If all they're doing is gathering knowledge, that's probably important for whatever's happening too, because we can see some elements of that touching, particularly like with the past expansion with the Drust and now with Ardenweald. There's some parallels there. There's some parallels to sort of that old god corruption creeping and how it moves and how it infects and how it changes. And as you're going through Ardenweald, you're looking at not just the anima drought, and like you can try to explain it as, oh, there's just an anima drought going on, this is why, but it's not. You find pretty early on that the Drust are involved here, but as you look at the areas that they've sort of taken or started fighting, it's almost as if it's that same type of infection, that same type of blood curse almost, where all of these Fawn, all of these agents of Ardenweald are being turned, not just because you know, the dresser are making him wear a mask, but why does that work? How does that work? The land is changing. The land is not withering, but morphing and becoming dark and gloomy and having that sort of same atmospheric pressure that you get when you go into Nazmir and you start going down into where you would enter into Aldir. Like, you start playing around there, it's that same atmosphere, that same level of corruption, that same level of changing. And it makes me wonder if the jailer specifically wanted Moisala because there was knowledge to gain from that that worked specifically in that. Not to mention, like, going back with the Drust connection. We know that the jailer is working with the Drust in some way. And
what are the Drust? The Drust are Vrykul.
Are Vrykul.
The Vrykul who have decided to basically pull their own souls out of their bodies and stick them in constructs.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, this whole eternal life thing, this sort of cheating death thing, but it's in a mechanism in a way that is sort of part and parcel with the Shadowlands. Because what do the Shadowlands do? They take souls, they convert it into something else for whatever purpose, whether it's being reborn into a Kyrian and becoming ascended, whether it's being reborn as a different form in Ardenwell, whether it's being reborn in a different form as one of the Venthyr, as being reborn in a different form as one of the Defenders in Maldraxxus. Like, that's sort of that shtick, right? And the Drust are just basically doing exactly that.
That is, in fact, what Odin is doing, too.
It is absolutely what's happening with Odin making his Stormforged. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically stealing souls from Bastion or, you know, whatever his candidate, you know, those people would have ended up in various places. But he's stealing souls from various that would have ended up in various zones, and he's putting them instead inside of his Stormforged.
Take it back a step even further. Look at the Titans and the Titanforge and the machine that creates them. Is there a reason that the Curse of Flesh bestows upon these creations a soul? Because that's literally what happened. As they become,
I'm going to say straight up, no, it's not the Curse of Flesh because they have souls.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at, is that they have souls from the very beginning. Where are they getting those souls from? Where is that energy going in? Where is it being pulled from?
For that matter, I mean, you know, when you're born, when anybody in Azeroth is born, they have a soul. I don't know if we can go as far as to say that they're stealing those souls from the Shadowlands. That does kind of make us do an interesting question, though, is where do souls come from? Where does anima come from? Because the Shadowlands may send them back, but they don't make them. And that's an interesting thing. Souls come from life, perhaps, and we don't know. There's a lot we don't know, but there's interesting. Like, this is setting up what's really happening here. The thing that keeps coming to my mind is that we're being set up to have a much broader Warcraft cosmology, a much more in-depth involved one than we've had up to this point. And we're being shown that all the stuff we've seen, all the stuff we've experienced has just been the tip of the iceberg. It's just been the part you can see floating above the water. And underneath the surface of the water is just a ton more ice. There's a lot more of that than we've ever seen or known. And I'm telling you right now, Sargeras will be out soon.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's not going to take a very long time.
I'm waiting for him. I'm waiting for our moment of he told us so.
Yeah, that's going to happen. We're going to end up being in a situation where I'm going to call this one now. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Fine. But what the heck? Not only will Sargeras be out, he'll be out because the Pantheon lets him out. And he's going to basically be, he's still going to be Sargeras, but he's going to be fighting alongside the Titans against something.
Yep. And it's not going to be necessarily the Void Lords.
Nope. This is getting way bigger than just the Void Lords. The Void Lords will be involved. The Void will be there. But we've now know that there's something behind the Naru.
Yeah, there's an entity that created the Naru, because they talk about it. They talk about the one that holds the reins of the Naru.
Yeah, and you know, is it Alun? We don't know, but Alun is definitely involved, because the tear of Alun is what created, it allowed the Naru to recreate Zira when they thought there was no way. It was the tear of Alun that allowed them to activate the core. So, yeah.
And the Tear of Alun had an impact not only on that, but look at the Ysera storyline. And again, mild spoilers, we know that Ysera was not just cleansed or... So that entire scene, I think we've been... I don't want to say thinking about it wrong. I don't think we killed Ysera. I think the entire purpose of that last sequence, and because you play through it as one of the things in Ardenweald, you play through that experience from Ysera's point of view. I don't think it's killing her. I think it's literally ripping her soul out of her body and sending it to the Shadowlands to be purified. Like, it's deconstructing her and sending her to another realm of existence, not killing her necessarily.
Well, I mean,
why the Tear of Elune needed to be necessary for that.
It also definitely seems that her role in Ardenweald is much more like the Wild Gods, in that there seems to be a possibility she's coming back. Like, that's the way it seems to be framed. I'm not going to say 100% on that, but...
Well, they made it pretty clear in the first interactions with her, where she's basically asked by what is ostensibly another god of, like, Ursoc, who says, "Will you go back now?" And she goes, "No, I think I have more to do here. I think I'm tied to this place in a way that I have never thought of before. Like, I'm new here, but I feel like I belong here." Why is that? Why does she feel like she belongs here? Is that because she's a child of Elune? Is it because she's touched? Is it because that she was sent there by the Tear of Elune? And Elune is tied to this place in the same way that the first ones are? And that's the another thing that I think is going to be interesting. We hear about the first ones, and I don't think it's just a clever reference to She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. I think that this is... We talk about, like, the ordering of the universe. There were things before the Titans. Before Amon-Thul woke up, there were other things. And if... what happened to them? Where did they go? What... if we know the Titans, and the Titans are these big, mysterious things, and the Titans know all these things and have all this knowledge, how do they not know about the first ones? Or do they know about the first ones?
That's my question. Is, yeah, because we see that the Titans can do stuff that seems to be first ones related in some fashion, it's quite possible that Titans are, if we look at the six things, the six forces, is there something in the realm of order that sent the Titans into Azeroth? And if there is that thing one of the first ones? Is there a first one for every one of these prime forces? Like, are they for lack of a better word, are they the elders of the universe of this cosmology? Are they how Galactus was born out of the Big Bang sort of thing? Are they like that? Are they, and I don't know, and it might not be related to it in any way. We know so little, but there's definitely something to this cosmology. And in fact, that's one of the beautiful things about it, is with this one phrase, they've created a whole new level to this cosmology that we've never even had before. And it's like I said, the iceberg. I mean, there's that whole... we're just starting to see, we're just, by going to the Shadowlands, we're dropping below water level.
Yeah. And that's a really great way to put it.
But we're still only seeing just a little. We've just gone just below the water level. There's so much more. Like, if the Shadowlands were created by the first ones, if the Maw was created as a prison, what was it created to hold? Was it created to hold the Jailer, or was it created, for another purpose?
The other thing that...
Before you go, I do want to let you go.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned the Jailer's hole in his chest, the black sphere. The Arbiter has a similar look in that area, but it's not... there's light in there.
Yeah, there's energy. There's actually a core, almost that's the essence of the being, and the framework is just essentially the robot body that it lives in. More or less.
Something. Yeah. But I just wanted to mention that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that I think is interesting, is particularly talking about the cosmology, is let's look at it reverse in talking about how big it's about to get. But I think it's also looking at how much of a 1,000-yard view the cosmology we received actually is. Because think about it. The Shadowlands is this small, tiny little circle in the representation that we've been given, just at the edge of reality. And now that we actually get into the Shadowlands, we're starting to see how expansive it is. And I talked about this when I was streaming some beta a couple weeks ago. When you are in Ouroboros and you look up, all you see are thousands and thousands and thousands of doorways. The same things that you summon down into the Ring of Transference. I think it's either the Ring of Transference or Ring of Traveling. I can't remember. That to go to the specific areas of the Shadowlands, to go to Bastion, to go to Ardenweald, to go to Maldraxxus, to go to Revendreth. And you look up and there are just thousands upon thousands of these gateways floating up there. The Shadowlands is larger than we think it is. It's larger than we're seeing. What does that mean for everything else?
Yeah, I don't mean to like just change subjects abruptly, but we haven't even talked about the Maldraxxus short.
Which we should, yeah.
The show is almost over, so do you want to cover Okay. Basically, the Maldraxxus short is a lot, in a way, it's a little simpler.
It's a lot straightforward
than the Bastion one because it's just prevented from one perspective and it's there's not a lot of mystery to it. I will say that I still do find it incredibly sad that after she died saving her son alongside her husband and life mate, that we never see what happened to her life mate. There's no one of the things I find really haunting with the Shadowlands is that your entire mortal life is just thrown away. And that's what happens here. Draka, Thrall's mother, is in Maldraxxus being trained. And she even says, I don't understand what they're training me to do. I don't get why I'm here. Because they're training her to be a spy and assassin, which is not something she was in life. I mean, she could fight, absolutely, but she wasn't a spy or assassin. That's not who she was. But obviously, again, Maldraxxus doesn't seem to care. It's weird because every realm so far has a different relationship to the way you were as a mortal. Like Ardenweald is about kind of going back. It's about the cycle and reincarnation and recreation and how death feeds life.
Mm-hmm.
Bastion is very much about just abandon everything, including your, abandon even your memories, abandon everything that makes you who you are and become a part of this, of just duty and service. And that's all you get to be. You don't get to be a person in Bastion. You just become service. Maldraxxus is different in that they don't make you forget, but they don't seem to care about anything involving your life. Like nothing you did in life seems to matter. They have want raw material. You've proven Maldraxxus seems to be about, you've got the will to fight. And that's all we care about. And there, one of the things that you see in the short as it goes through is you see her doing missions. One of those missions is clearly to attack a legion outpost and get secrets from it.
To back it up just a little bit, the Maldraxxus, for those that don't understand, there were five great houses that ruled Maldraxxus in the defending area. When she gets there, specifically she's working with, or she's been recruited by the House of Eyes.
Which is the spy group. Yeah,
they're the spy group, and not only is she there, but this is also the same house that Lady Vash appears in, now Baroness. But like, this is not a warrior house necessarily. This is the information core of the military wing of Maldraxxus.
But again, it's about that will to fight, to struggle. You see her. Doing, like I said, one of the missions she does is clearly infiltrating a legion something. There's those big green dudes with the big green axes. But she comes back and she's like reporting to the head of the House of Eyes. And she's like, the one house has already been destroyed as they're talking. Look, one of the houses of Maldraxxus has already been destroyed. He's like, I've got this message for you to deliver to this other house. And again, I can't remember the house names. Do you remember the house that she's sent to?
The House of the Champions.
Yeah. And she's sent to go report to that guy. And as she's leaving, something destroys the House of Eyes thing that she was just in. Like she sees it get destroyed and she rides up and there's two Maldraxxus like undead standing there. And she's like, brothers, help me. And they attack her.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes stealth mode and kills them because she's Draka and she's badass. Absolutely cool. Cool moment, Draka. You're super hot, by the way. But that whole bit, when she does that, and then she reports to the House of Champions, and he's the guy she reports to is like,
sorry, Chosen, House of the Chosen.
House of Chosen, thank you. When she reports to them, she delivers a message, and the message basically says, here is the weapon you will, I present to you the weapon you will need to save Maldraxxus. And she's like, he didn't give me anything else. And the guy's like, what, a warrior with the skills of an assassin? I think maybe he did give us something. And that's how it ends. And there's a lot in here. Like, for instance, that connection again to the Legion, which connects up with the thing we started talking about with the Nathrezim. That's interesting because it seems like other forces in the Shadowlands are also studying the other groups in the cosmos. And the Shadowlands, it's interesting because the Shadowlands, for all that they're a realm of death, Bastion is full of the light. It's all over the freaking place.
The light touches Revendreth. Like, there's an entire zone of Revendreth where it's refocused, but the light still touches there as well.
And for that matter, I mean, the Void invades Bastion at one point. There's a lot of stuff going on here, but what's really interesting to me about the Draga thing, besides the haunting, painful aspect of your entire mortal life gets tossed in the trash, and you just have to do this stuff, is this idea that there's always been threats to the Shadowlands. Because that's what Mil'Draxxus was set up to do, is defend the Shadowlands from other forces trying to invade the Realm of Death. And that's been going on all this time. So, like, from the moment the Shadowlands was created, whenever that was, they needed an army to defend them. Because people were trying to come in. Because of course they were. People don't want to be dead. And there's power. There's tons of power to be stolen. There's all this anima there. Of course you're trying to get in and take it. That to me is really fascinating. And it's not something we need to see more to know really what that means, that there needed to be a place to defend the Shadowlands. But that to me is like the moment you really take away from, they had a reason for building this. So again, it goes back to the first ones. It goes back to, like, what was the Shadowlands made for? Who made it? Why was it created? But that to me is really interesting.
The thing for me with the Mil'Draxxus Afterlife short is I agree that it's much more straightforward than Bastion was, and I think it's far less shocking than Bastion was, because Bastion presented a lot of new information on old things that we've been speculating about for years, even before the whole Nathrezim angle was presented just a few days ago to us. It was causing a lot of things to start to click into place of certain events and how things sort of happened, at least for me. What Mil'Draxxus does is it widens the playing field. And I've said this for years, and I will continue to say this, player characters and even the NPCs we work with and the nations we serve are incredibly short-sighted. That's just the nature of us. That's just how we are. We look at the immediate threat. We don't look at the long game. Mil'Draxxus has that entire short points out that at least some entities that have have a layer of separation from us that is so minute, because when we die, we go to the Shadowlands. They're just on the other side of that veil, you know, reach out and touch them, whatever. They have a view grander by an order of magnitude of what's going on. Margrave Akarrick, the leader of the House of Eyes, makes that point very clearly in his actions and how everything happens with Draka. Because the training sequence, everything that he put her through, was for a very specific purpose. We don't know to the extent of what that is yet, but we will. But it's because he had a larger view of the cosmic game and what's at stake. And I think that's fascinating, because we've been so focused on old gods and void lords and, you know, what are the titans and all this other stuff. We didn't stop to consider, at least as a larger group, that there is something bigger and something more possibly damaging than even those large threats. And it makes me think, and we talked about this a little bit, I'm starting to think that there is going to be this point where Sargeras and the Titans stand beside us, but so do the Void Lords. Because, yes, they can see all paths and all paths are true. And they even talk about this in the letter, that they might be able to see this path, that they might be able to see the end game. The one thing we keep talking about is that the old gods in the void, they're not dumb. They're not dumb by any stretch of the imagination. And maybe they have that sort of capability of seeing too wide of a game, but maybe they can zero in on it. And I keep thinking, what potentially could cause all of that to come together? What out there would be threatening enough to cause everything to have to work towards one goal? And I think that the answer is going to be somewhere in the middle of what we're dealing with. we're going to start to find out little bits and pieces. Like I said, where did the first ones go? Are the first ones still out there? Are, when they talk about the six high seats, is it because they're the first ones of the, these pocket dimensions of life and order and death and everything else? Are they still there? Is something preventing them from having direct intervention? Are they preventing themselves from having direct intervention? Is there something that works in direct opposition to them? Because there's that line about one that will consume them all. I don't necessarily think it's the jailer. I think there's something bigger than the jailer. And the Madraxa short sort of drove that home for me. So I don't know. I don't know what you think about
that. I think what the jailer is doing is trying to escape something that was built to hold something. And I don't know if it was built to hold the jailer. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the whole idea, there always must be a Lich King.
There must always be a jailer.
Maybe the reason we need a jailer of the damned is because something was damned. Maybe the Maw isn't just a prison plane. I'm going to steal this. This is an idea that goes back to Exalted. If you ever played Exalted.
Yep, I was going to bring up. Yep.
But what if the Maw itself is the thing you need to keep locked away? Because it eats souls. Because it is the true death. No life comes back from it. Anima doesn't go anywhere else. That's just something I've been thinking about. I'm not going to, let's for now, I think we should probably be done.
I think so too.
That's something that I'm going to put out there. The Maw itself might be the problem.
So I want to hear your guys' theories out there on what you think might be going on. Be sure to hit us up. We've been paying attention to chat. I've been interacting in chat the last couple of days, particularly just kind of seeing how everybody's been reacting to it. Feel free to throw it in there on our Discord channel. We do have a supporter and patron chat section. And as always, like, we want your questions too. So if you have questions that you want us to answer, feel free to send them in for this podcast or the other one. You can send them in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can also give them to our Discord channels. We have one set aside for patrons and supporters, which we will always give preference to, which thank you for your continued support. But if you can't necessarily swing that and you just want to throw questions our way as well, you can go ahead and we have a regular chat channel for those, which is the Q questions. And we do pull from there as well. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. So without anything more to say, I think I just want to thank everybody for all of your continued support, and we'll see you next week.
Dolphins.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.